Yes, please.
I need
Thank
to
you.
Start sharing. Yep, we're in the right talk. Yep, and then I'll do just laser point. Yeah, can everyone hear and see me okay? Yeah, okay. Hello, everyone. Thanks a lot, Francesca, for inviting. It's a great honor for me to speak here, and thank you very much for coming. I have to say that I didn't know who my audience are going to be, so some things are going to be really, really basic. So apologies for that if this is too, if some things are too simple. So I've started as a new group leader fellow at the Crop Science Center in October 2021. And I'm going to talk to you about my interest in fertility of plants and crops under heat stress. So a couple of words about where I am, a bit of introduction. So I'm in this lovely building, which is a crop science center in Cambridge. And we have just this slide just to show you that we have an amazing plant science base in Cambridge. And this is represented by the Department of Plant Science as shown here, the Sainsbury Lab, the Botanical Gardens, and also NIAB, which is National Institution of Agricultural Botany. And Crop Science Center is so tightly connected with the National Institution of Agricultural Botany, so it's even almost the same building. So this brown bits is the newly built Crop Science Center, and this is the NIAB. And the idea of this Crop Center is to be able to combine the fantastic academic fundamental research that's going on in Cambridge, across Cambridge, with the fantastic crop science and discoveries, and being able to put them into practice that's empowered by NIAB and NIAB's links to breeders and growers and end users. And the philosophy is that we want to do fundamental science at the Crop Center, but we want to translate it into practice. And we are interested, we are really driven by making sure that our research will contribute to sustainability and equity in agriculture. And the technologies that we develop will be available to smallholder farmers as well as economies with big countries with big economies and big farming. So this is just to show that Crop Science Center and NIAB even have fields where we can do trials. And this is just a small amount of how much things can be put into practice due to collaborations and working of NIAB and Crop Center with people and end users in the UK and across the world. So the Crop Science Center has three big questions, and this is: one is replacing inorganic fertilizers, another one is enhancing photosynthesis, and a third one is reducing loss due to pests and pathogens. But also, here comes my topic, which is breeding technologies and trying to understand how to achieve segregation of traits, which in this cartoon, I'm showing you pollen of a model plant, Arabidopsis, but this is just to show you the principle. So traits in this picture are colored in blue, green, and red. And this is an image of showing them all together. And just to, we are interested in my group specifically, and also in Henderson's groups at the group at the Department of Plant Sciences, we're interested how to control segregation of traits in crops to be able to breed the sustainable crops and crops that can yield under different stresses and different climate conditions sustainably. And this is part of my research as well. So I have a long standing interest in plants. So I started when I started my science career with my PhD, I was looking at plant viruses. But then more recently, I moved into the Department of Plant Sciences in Cambridge and Ian Henderson's group, where I did a look at plant reproduction. And if we think about cell division, usually we think about mitosis, which is majority of cells in our body and in plant organisms. And that's when a mother cell gives rise to two identical daughter cells. But we need to forget about this cell division for the time of this talk, because the cell division that I'm interested in is meiosis, and that's what happens during reproduction of all sexually reproducing organisms. And the idea is, because mom and dad are getting are giving egg and sperm that are joined together to produce offspring, if they kept the same ploidy as the egg and sperm of the mom and dad, then every next generation would be increasing the ploidy, the amount of DNA they have in their cells, and this is not going to work. So therefore, this is the cell division called meiosis. And then, how do you divide a cell that has a 2n diploid number of chromosomes into 4 haploid gametes that have 1n, half the amount of genetic material, accurately? This is quite a tricky question, and the nature has developed this meiosis, this special cell division, where chromosomes to divide equally into 4 haploid gametes, they are held together, and they actually exchange genetic information. So in the red and then pale blue are chromosomes from mom and dad, and you can see that as a result, so when they are held together, this ensures their accurate segregation, and as a result, you get 4 haploid gametes with exactly the same amount of genetic material. But what you also can see is that none of them are identical, and this causes genetic variation, which is a huge, huge advantage for sexually reproducing organisms and for their evolution. So meiosis is a complex process, and I'm showing you some micrographs of the DNA, starting from the mother cell, which is diploid, and then undergoing all sorts of changes in the shape and form of the chromosomes. And this is when the cell has divided once, so this is this stage, and then it's divided once again, and these are 4 haploid gametes. And because it's very complex, when something goes wrong, then there is problems with fertility. So meiosis is very important for crop breeding, and that's because, so here I'm showing you chromosomes, and the green dots are crossovers, and you can appreciate how few they are. There is only 1 or 2 per chromosome, and this is enough to ensure accurate chromosome segregation, but this is actually not really enough for the breeders to have fast breeding programs, and that's why all the breeding programs take so long. So I'm showing you examples from wheat, soybean, and barley chromosomes. So in wheat and soybean, it's example of just 1 chromosome from telomere, and then centromere will be somewhere in the middle. And this is the other telomere. And this is the barley chromosomes all together, and they're oriented from telomere to centromere. And on the y-axis is the frequency of crossovers. And I'm sure you can appreciate how there are some regions which are almost completely devoid of crossovers, and in other regions, crossovers are unevenly distributed. And this is where this such thing as linkage drugs comes in, where you can have 2 traits, one is deleterious, one is beneficial, and then if there are no crossovers or very few crossovers between them, then the breeders are having a problem of getting rid of the deleterious trait, and this phenomenon is called as linkage drag, and this is one of the aspects that my lab is interested in, but I'm not gonna talk about it today. And the second thing is very important, is that if something goes wrong with meiosis, just as I said a couple of slides ago, then pollen becomes abnormal and plants are infertile. So here is an example from a model plant, Arabidopsis, but you can see it in any plant you try. So this is a special stain which stains live pollen red, and you can see several pollen grains here are blue and they're dead. So this is a healthy plant, and you always get a little bit of percentage of dead pollen grains. But if something goes completely wrong, then the amount of those pollen grains, dead pollen grains, increases, and you get less fertilization and crop losses. And this is an example from a different staining. This is just after meiosis has happened. There are four, and here is a healthy example where there are four nuclei and they're even size. And this is where everything went wrong and you get bits and fragments of genetic material. And this is not gonna lead to healthy pollen or for seed yield. So what I'm going to talk to you about is what how temperature affects fertility of crops. So I have to say that my interest is meiosis, and I'm going to be mainly focusing on that, and I'm not going to talk about other aspects, but I have to say in advance that there are many, many aspects of plant physiology and development that are affected by temperature, and that's just beyond this purpose of this talk. So this slide is just to show you how many organisms, and this is both plants and non-plant species, where it's reported that temperature changes affects their fertility. And so you can appreciate that the effect is quite big. And also, if we talk about climate change, there are scientists who think in the community who think that we need to think about what happens to the populations and species on the population species and ecological level, because if these guys are affected, if their fertility is affected by temperature, then obviously with temperature shift we can have a completely different landscape of what organisms are populating the planet. So with plants, we're interested in crops for the purpose of this talk. And several studies have shown that increased temperatures or even small fluctuations in temperature result in reduced fertility. And this is a graph to show you a study in different species and to show you how increases. So in black is the temperatures that are optimal for these species, and then white is damaging temperatures. So you can see that for many species from different groups of crops, this is a relevant problem. And just to give you an example, so obviously heat very often goes together with drought. So this is a table that some, although I'm interested in heat mainly, but drought is a similar problem. And this is just to give you an example and a flavor of the scale of crop losses due to heat and or drought. So my lab is mainly looking at either model plants or legumes, and this is because legumes are very important for sustainable agriculture. They're great for intercropping. They have smaller carbon footprint. They are great because of their nitrogen fixing abilities, and there are lots of different aspects why they're absolutely fantastic for sustainability and also for human dietary benefits. They have very low glycemic index, so slow release of energy and good for maintenance and prevention of type 2 diabetes and other diseases. And they're also quite great models because they have tools that we can use to study them, and relatively small genomes, and lots of them are diploid, which also means that studies are much easier than in crops like wheat, for example. So the main questions of my work is, why is fertility affected by temperature, and how can we reduce crop losses during heat stress that occurs during reproductive stage? So I have to say that obviously I'm not the only one who is interested in this, and this is just a few examples of how people all over the world are trying to solve this problem because it's so relevant to the agriculture. I just want to focus on a couple of approaches that I'm developing in my lab. So one is based on the model Plant Arabidopsis, which has a very small genome, has a lot of tools that have been developed, and it's ideal for forward genetic screens where you can mutagenize the whole plant, then screen it for certain phenotypes, and then identify using modern sequencing technologies and basic genetics, you can identify the genes, the causal genes. And then my thinking is that if we can do that, and then we can introgress these genes or mutations in these genes into crop species, then we'll be able to overcome the problem of crop losses during heat stress. So this is just an example, just to show you how clear the phenotypes are. So this is Arabidopsis once it's flowered, and these little sticky out things is the fruit called silex, and they would have seeds in them. So if you subject Arabidopsis to heat stress, that's what happens to the silex. So what I'm planning to do is to do a forward genetic screen where I mutagenize a population of Arabidopsis, I put it back into heat stress, and then I look for mutants that do not do this if I expose them to heat. That's a very clear visual phenotype. Another tool that we have, those of us who are looking at meiosis, is developed by Greg Koppenhaver at the University of North Carolina in the US. So he has developed fluorescent markers that are expressed in pollen. So I'm showing you five Arabidopsis chromosomes here. Every black bar is the chromosome and the black dot is the centromere. And those triangles are GFP or RFP that are expressed on the pollen specific promoter. So what you can see, so yeah, I also have to say that in this study, four pollen grains, these four little ovals are four pollen grains. They are held together due to a mutation, and that's just done to make interpretation of the results easier, so you don't need to worry about it for now. So an example is here. So these two pollen grains are expressing both the green and the red fluorescent markers, and when together, when you overlay this, it looks yellow. And then in this tetrad, the green has segregated away. And then you can see that one pollen grain is expressing both, and the other are expressing one each red and green. And this way you can measure crossovers in intervals which are flanked by these markers. And I have looked at it, and there, Greg's and Kirsten Bombley's labs have looked at it. So we know in the meiosis community that changing temperatures. So I looked at colder temperatures. Greg's and Kirsten's labs have looked at hotter temperatures. We know that genetic distances, so 21 and 12 is degrees centigrade, and y-axis is the crossover frequency. So you can see that in this interval, and in this interval, the genetic distances have changed, and this is because meiosis is affected by temperature. So if you, in this case, the temperature change wasn't big enough to make plants infertile, and anyway, cold temperature is not as bad for Arabidopsis as the hot temperature. But any defects, as I said at the beginning, any defects in meiosis lead to infertility. So using this reporter system, we can screen for mutants and that would deviate from this. For example, they would have either stronger response or a weaker response to temperature. Excuse me. So another way to use this reporter system is to look at aneuploidy. And here there's an example that when it's proper division, you have to have two green to red gametes and pollen grains. And if the mutations have, if heat has affected meiosis, then you get all sorts of abnormalities in division, and then reversal back to the wild type in the mutant population would be also a sign that plants are resilient to heat stress. And then in addition to forward genetic screens in model plants, another approach that my lab is trying to employ is to look at the natural variation. And this is just an example of a natural variation in cowpea, but there are lots of different legume wild relatives and natural variants of legume crop species which manage to maintain resilience and maintain seed set during heat stress. And my thinking is that they have managed to overcome the challenges of heat onto a reproductive stage, and partly it would be some other aspects of of sexual reproduction, but partly it would be affected. Meiosis would be affected, and I'm involved in a big collaborative project where we are trying to understand the underlying mechanisms. And so just to close my talk, the overarching aim of my research is to be able to use either model species or natural variation to understand the mechanisms why plants can overcome susceptibility to heat stress during reproductive stage. And then the hope is that once we know this mechanism, we'll be able to introgress them into crop species and address the issue of resilience and food security. And in summary, I just showed you that fertility, different aspects of fertility are affected by temperature in many species, and meiosis is one of them. And that contributes to infertility due to temperature stress. And obviously crop losses due to heat stress have direct impact on agriculture. And I believe that forward genetic screens and forward genetic approaches and exploring natural variation could give us some clues to overcome these difficulties and bring us at least a couple of steps forward towards resilient crops and sustainability. And this is it, thank you.
Thank you, Natasha. Thank you very much. It's very kind of complex, and I might have missed a couple of bits of the genetics, but I got there. Before we open, very quickly, is a more generic question for you and for everyone in a way. I mean, obviously the temperature is going to rise, and there's probably very little that we can do to bring it down. But is there an argument in a way to think that we could just live with the fact that some areas are just going to lose some crops, and some other areas now are going to adopt those crops that used to be in warm areas, and it's just going to be a shift and a sort of moving around, like probably has happened for centuries, and I'm sure our archaeologists in the audience here can probably testify. I mean, is there an argument behind that? Could we maybe go with that?
Well, this argument would work very well if we want to introduce soybean to the UK. And there's been even a study which says that, okay, soybean is obviously like tropical countries, but because UK and everywhere is getting warmer, so maybe we'll be able to introduce new legumes into the UK agriculture. That would be fantastic. But if we think about sub-Saharan Africa, if we think about countries that rely on legume crops for every, like some of them are, okay, here we call fava bean a poor man's meat, but in sub-Saharan Africa and in Africa in general, there are lots of households and the whole economies where people are having legumes as the main, one of the main sources of protein. And I think having temperatures over 35 degrees, and especially in the night, that's what caused pollen abortion in many of the species. And I think possibly we can't really face the situation when such big agricultural areas would be not able to produce any crops. So if we can, and there is so much knowledge in this community, if we can do make a difference, and if we can make a change and understand the mechanism, that would be really beneficial.
Yeah, for the whole cycle. I would like to ask anyone to ask to pose questions and comments, please, to Natasha.
I have a question.
Manash, yes.
Hello, hi. So, you know, have you thought about Parthenocarpic fruit set? Because, you know, it is happening in tomatoes and cucurbits, you know, where actually fruit sets without pollination, so you don't need pollen grain. So you kind of avoid high temperature and cold temperature, you know, extreme temperature, things like that. I wonder if there are genes conserved like that, or any studies being done in this area in legumes?
Sorry, I didn't quite understand. So you're saying that sometimes you don't need...
Yeah, you don't need pollination. You know, like best example is cucumber. Parthenocarpic fruit set. The best example is cucumbers. you know, the cucumbers you buy in the supermarket, they're all parthenocarpic and seedless. So they are straight, they said fruit without pollination. Uh-huh. So it's a mutation. And so there are now parthenocarpic genes in tomato where you have fruit set without pollination. So I wonder if there are mutants like that or somebody has studied in legumes. So in this case, uh-huh. you don't need pollen grain because fruit is setting without pollination.
That's a fantastic point. I have to say that I'm completely ignorant in here. It's a fantastic point, but this is something to look into. Yes, that would be amazing. But as during my talks with anyone who works on legumes, no one mentioned it. So no, like especially people who are actually working on like having this problem of pollen abortion. So it's probably either not developed or, but I will look into it. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your talk. And thank you to the organizers.
Anyone else? Any comments or questions? Natasha, I just said I'll put you in touch with Manash. So
thank you.
Can continue this, that'd be great.
Hi, Peter.
Thank you, Natasha. That was really interesting. You said at the very beginning, and of course that's true, that heat has such a complex impact on living systems that it's very difficult for to nail down the individual physiological processes that it impacts. But it is notable that it is specifically the viability of the pollen that's affected. So the plant can survive this temperature, it doesn't die, but the pollen does. So can you, from that, have some ideas of what physiological processes in the pollen are affected, and therefore what kind of genes might be involved in then coming up with a tolerance trait for heat stress?
Yeah, fantastic question. Thank you. So what I know about is one is saying there is this pollen, the myocytes that are going meiosis, and then there is a layer of cells around them, sort of like feeder layer, which is tapetum. And tapetum is the one to collapse first during heat and drought. Now, how to keep tapetum alive? I don't know. And I think I'm hoping that the mutants of natural variants will tell me. But this is one thing. Another thing is like when heat or cold temperature, any temperature abnormalities. So for meiosis to occur, two homologs from mom and dad have to synapse. So the first starts synapsing not fully, and then it comes like a zipper. And there is even a protein complex that holds them together. So it's like zips them up. As soon as there is an abnormality in temperature, this zipper doesn't work. So if they're not synapsed, crossovers don't happen. If crossovers don't happen, they don't segregate properly. And you get aneuploidy. So these are two reasons which I already know. And because people have tried different, there are some hypotheses, there are some reverse genetics approaches, but nothing has led to anything solid. I think that's where we need to do a forward genetics approach. Yeah, does this answer your question?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Thank you, Peter, for the question. Anyone else? Any questions or comments? Anyone else? Natasha, just I would like to ask you, which areas are you working in? You mentioned the various areas in the world, of course, but are you focusing on a specific area in a sort of field work, or it's mostly lab for now?
So for now it's lab, but I'm looking into being able to develop technologies where I can move around crossover frequencies. In legumes, and I'm talking to different companies to see whether anyone is interested to implement these technologies. And the second thing, the temperature, it's going to be, I'm just starting, so it's going to be several years until we get to the genes, but the natural variation is a collaborative project with colleagues in Africa and the US.
Okay. I think. Do you feel that we will be able to make the necessary progress in time? Because sometimes it's quite pressing, right? And there is quite long going research. What do you think?
I think yes. I think the sequencing technology, the genetics, the SNP arrays, everything, and also the fact that people are collaborating across the world, I think we're in a really good position. And people, there's been already quite a lot of changes. I mean, if you look in the botanical gardens, it's not very even recent, but it's such dramatic. If you look at all the wheat, how it was bred to be smaller, yeah. Then if you think about NIAB's fantastic achievement of synthetic wheat, I mean, there is so much good. The technology is so fast at the moment that I think we are in a good position to make a change.
You're catching up, hopefully. Anyone else, please, before we lose Natasha, who has to leave in 10 minutes. Anyone else? Comments, questions, observations? No? Okay. Natasha, would you like to? Yes, another question from Peter before we close.
Sorry, I'm just going to take
please.
Nobody else's. I really like the attention to this particular aspect of climate impact, because as you're saying, heat and drought are very correlated, but it's in this case, this particular time of pollen set where it really hits the plant. And something that we're hearing from farmers that we work with in Ethiopia is that they are facing just so many different kinds of stress, and they don't know which kind of stress they're going to be facing any one season, because it could be a terminal drought or it could be an early season flood, and any one of those things could happen any one season. So it's important that they have crops that can survive all these different impacts, because they don't know which one is going to be the one that happens this year. So while we have to breed crops for a warmer world, we also have to breed crops for a much more variable world, and one where the agricultural conditions are becoming much less predictable. And that's a really big challenge and a good reason for why we need something like the new breeding technologies that you're bringing in, because we'll need to be able to bring traits together much faster than before. So great work you're doing.
Thank you.
Wonderful, thank you. And Natasha, obviously we are here also to assist, to assist you. And if we can help you connecting with more and creating collaborations, that'd be fantastic.
Thank you.
Various areas. Anyone else before we close? Now, never. You have the chance, but of course, I will put down I'll write down here, in fact, the email address. Or in fact, Natasha, would you like to leave your email address and details?
Yeah, I can share.
If anyone would like to get in touch, please do, and you can continue conversation aside.
Definitely. If anyone wants to drop me an email, you're very welcome. Yeah.
And I'll definitely put you in touch with Manash. Thank you so much, Natasha. Unless anyone has a very sort of burning question before we close. No, okay. It was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And there'll be the recording and the slides will be also on the website. And I'm sure there'll be a few people who want to catch up with that. And a few clap seconds.
Thank you.
Around. So
thanks
thank
very
you.
Much for
thank
coming.
You so much. Have a nice weekend, everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.